Friends with Brews.
Hi, Peter.
Oh, you're not Peter. Who are you? You're definitely not Peter.
Definitely not Peter.
Well, let's celebrate that with some beer today. This is Adam Bell. You've been on the podcast before, so listeners should know who you are. And if they don't, I don't know why they haven't gone back to listen.
That's an interesting blur. I'll have to
turn off. Yeah, it is.
Turn off my blur. There we go.
Turn off your blur. Blur your blur.
I believe in Nashville.
I believe in Nashville Blonde Ale. That's cool.
Yeah. Nice.
How far are you from Nashville?
I'm right outside. I'm adjacent. So I'm Davidson County. I'm in Sumner County, and it's about a mile down the road to Davidson County.
Okay. So that's truly a local beer for you.
Yeah. The I Believe in Nashville was a big push. That logo, the flag, and the TriStar, that was a big push after the tornado that came through. Tornado and flood. It's kind of been like our raise the flag mantra. We're going to put it all back together. So it's kind of been so it's pretty fairly new, recently speaking.
So they're getting behind that by printing that on their can. Do you know if they're like any of the proceeds from that beer goes toward anything or?
That I don't know.
Okay. I'm just curious. It doesn't matter. I'm not judging him either way.
Yeah. I'm not judging you, but you should be donating to charity.
Not judging you, but my gosh, you guys are tight bastards. Okay. So mine is actually made in Astoria, Oregon, which is on the coast. So a couple hours from here or so.
Yeah.
It's Bui brand.
Bui.
And this is a Czech style Pilsner. My wife actually bought these because she was looking for something on the yellowish golden spectrum, not the dark spectrum. And she doesn't drink a whole lot anyway, so she just bought some of these 12-ounce cans. I think she might drink one a month at the most. But anyway, they're pretty good. They're not bad. I've had one before. It's not bad, but after I crack it open and pour it, I'll give more detailed thoughts on it. But Astoria is kind of a fun little town to go to. They've got a lot of touristy shopping stuff. They've got some really good food. But this brewery was closed when we were there last time.
Uh-huh.
And they have a restaurant there and a brewery, and they were closed for some kind of renovation or repairs. I'm not sure what was going on with them, but presumably this beer is safe to drink now. I don't know.
Well, and then, of course, the Goonies came from Astoria, too.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny. I recently read a book that was talking about Astoria. I mean, they weren't talking about it from the Goonies standpoint, but they were talking about how there was actually a lot of pirates based in Astoria back in the day of pirates were a big thing.
That's, I guess, because that's where all the beer was. I don't know. No, I think the Goonies were there before Bui beer was there. I don't know. I haven't looked up the history of Bui beer to see when they came around, but this is the second one I've had, and I can't remember what the other one of theirs I had was. I wasn't super impressed with it. I actually like this one better. Here's what the color looks like.
Oh, it's nice and clear. Not clear, but
good one.
Yeah, this is a blonde ale. I normally go to darker, but you know, it's summertime now.
That's just it. This is a good summer beer. It's a little bit light. So this is a Czech style Pilsner, and it says a classic lightly hopped Pilsner, which I believe that's true. It doesn't taste overly hoppy. And as you know, Peter and I hate overly hoppy stuff. That's why we don't care for IPAs that much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I would describe the taste. There's a strong hint of something, and I don't know what it is. You tell me, what's the Czech style Pilsner? What's Czech style versus any other kind of Pilsner?
Well, I believe it has to do with the hops, how they hop it. And then, of course, the yeast that they use, you know, it's an ale yeast, but I think it's just really the kind of, it's not spectacularly different than any other ale.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty good. I don't know exactly how to describe it. I'm not one of those people that can make up words like crisp and dry yet fruity with strawberry and cocoa. And I taste a little bit of wooden chair in here, but there is a strong hint of something with it. I don't know if I would drink this with tacos or something. Maybe. I don't know. It's different. I might have this with pizza, though. It might be pretty good with pizza. It is a beer that I do like. It is not my top Pilsner of choice. It's not the Pilsner that I would fight a mob of angry monks for. I don't know why monks and anger and beer go together, but...
So do you taste any toasted biscuit?
No. Is that what it's supposed to be like? There is a hint of something toasty to it. That is not a lie. I wouldn't have defined it as biscuit.
So it's supposed to be slightly sweet, toasted biscuit and bready aromas.
I could buy the bready part. I don't think it's slightly sweet, to be honest. Maybe? I don't know. The toasty part overpowers the sweetness for sure. But it's good. I like it.
But it kind of checks your boxes. It's supposed to be low to medium, noble hop presence.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely is along those lines. I do like it for that. And let's see. Peter's number one priority, alcohol by volume. This is a 6.2, I think it says.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a little higher than you would think for a Pilsner.
Maybe you're tasting the alcohol.
That could be. Although I have had a lot of beers that are stronger than this, and I don't know. I don't know. I believe the toasted part. I'll just say that. Whatever it is, I'll pretend it's toasted.
It's toasted. So yes. This one here is 4.5%, and it's actually a pint. So it adds up to more alcohol because there's just more volume.
Yeah, there you go. You're even with me because I have got 6.2 at 12 ounces. So
I think you'd like this. There's almost no hop. I mean, I guess technically it has to be somewhat hopped, but I don't taste anything but malt. Do you ever drink Yuengling?
Huh. You've talked about it before on this podcast, I think. But no, I've never had it.
Yeah, I like Yuengling. Yuengling is, if I'm going to go fishing and I want to drink beer and I don't want a headache, you know, a half hour later, I drink Yuengling because it's a quality domestic beer. This tastes like Yuengling. Yuengling has a bitter aftertaste, a bitter finish. There's no bitter finish. So I think you'd like this.
Yeah, sounds good. It's probably more of what I would think of. Can you show me that again? The can? It's probably more what I think of along the... Yeah, it's probably more what I was... It's probably actually more what my wife was hoping to get when she bought this, to be honest. Awesome. Well, Peter is in Puerto Rico again, and he didn't tell me he was... Well, I'm not saying he has to approve his itinerary with me, but he didn't give me a heads up to let me know I needed to find a guest for this week until I finally said, hey, I've noticed you're in Puerto Rico. By any chance, are you not coming back by Monday? And he goes, yeah, I'm not coming back by Monday. I'm like, okay, thanks.
Yeah. So,
I really appreciate your doing this.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really come up with a lot of topics for today, except for one. Mm-hmm. And you have editorial rights over whether or not... I don't like to dictate to other people what they like to talk about themselves.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
But Peter and I have talked on this podcast about how we got into computers and our origin stories. But I don't know if I've ever heard how you got into computers and what's your origin story. Actually, what led you into running your own consulting business?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everybody's a little bit different, but mine's pretty standard nerd geek, you know. I mean, you and I don't know the differences, but, you know, if I ask some person who's not in IT, they're like, yeah, that's what all of you guys say.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So for me, I have no idea why my parents bought a computer when I was 8 years old. They really didn't have a lot of money, and it really wasn't something that they really should have spent a bunch of money on, but they did. They bought a Tandy 1000, and it was a green... you know, monochrome monitor. So all I had was green and black. And I bought it with King's Quest. No hard drive. I did have a floppy. I didn't have a tape.
Oh, so you were past, you skipped that whole thing.
Okay. I skipped the tapes altogether. I'm like, I'm not doing a tape.
Yeah.
So I got into that. And then, I mean, and it just, you know, it snowballed as far as gaming went. And it became a hobby of, okay, I need more RAM. You know, I need 16 more K of RAM so I can play California games. And, you know, so it's funny. I don't know why I keep this. I've thrown away all of my old floppies, all of everything. But I've got this California Dreamin' Street Rod game from my Tandy 1000. And I opened it up when I saw that. And I've got the Sims 1 game in there and Leisure Suit Larry's Land of the Lounge Suit Lizards in there.
You have all those games from that era.
Yeah.
It's funny how when I thought about this topic, I was going to say, how'd you go from playing Prince of Persia to being an IT consultant? But it wasn't Prince of Persia, it was King's Quest. But
yeah. And what was his name? Prince? Oh.
I don't remember. I know I played some of those games, but I don't remember a whole lot about them. Just like I know that when we first, when my brother first made his
Alexander,
I know that when we first got into computers, we were using tape drives for stuff, but I don't really remember the experience of it because tape drives are freaking inconvenient. Like, you could only really put one program on a tape, or else you had to have some sort of system for locating where on the tape your specific program was. I mean, it's ridiculous if you think about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, listening to music on cassette tape and trying to find a specific song was stupid enough. but this was computer programs. Yeah, so that's interesting. I can't remember if Peter said he had the Tandy 1000 or if it was a different kind of Tandy.
Yeah. So that's how I got... I mean, that was like... what I cut my teeth on. I started mm-hmm. programming in BASIC. Then I was playing games. I was word processing. I was trying to find any reason to use a computer to do things, even if it was the most complicated way to do it.
I mean, isn't that still what we are all doing today?
Yeah.
Finding a way to get the computer involved and take hours to set up a system for something that would take minutes.
Yeah, I've got to justify a MacBook Pro. How many things can I?
That's right. And by the way, I found it, and Peter had a Tandy 1000 SX at one point.
Nice. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't even have a joystick. I remember in King's Quest, I had to go upstairs, and I had to take my cursor upright, you know, until I got up the steps. It was awesome.
Way back in the day when I first started getting into driving sims, I didn't even have a joystick. And even a joystick is suboptimal for a good driving sim. You need a wheel.
Yeah.
Because it's like driving a car. You wouldn't drive a car with a joystick, at least not very well, although people technically pilot helicopters that way, I guess. But yeah, I was trying to use a keyboard to, you know, drive a Formula One car around a racetrack. And it turns out it doesn't work. It turns out there's a reason that real Formula One cars have steering wheels and not keyboards. It's amazing.
Imagine. Well, if not, nobody would drive. We'd just all sit behind our computers and race the cars, the drone Indy cars. But so anyway, so going back, you know, I did gaming all the way into college. You know, in my college years, I was fooling around with games like Warcraft and StarCraft mm-hmm. and things like that that were modem, where I was really learning about networking at that point. You know, you and I want to play. Okay, I need to figure out how our modems are going to connect. And, you know, I can't wake your mom up. So you got to be ready, Johnny on the spot, to answer that phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or we're both going to get in trouble.
Yeah. And it better not drop out in the middle of the game, because that's going to be a problem.
Multiplayer games had to be a lot different back then because you had to tolerate a lot more lag. Like now, I've watched people play. One of my friends used to play a lot of multiplayer games. What was the one he used to like to play? Gosh, I can't remember. But if there was any lag at all, you were toast. Like, everything happened so freaking fast that even the tiniest bit of lag and you were going to die. In fact, one game he was getting criticism from one of the other guys in there. And the guy sounded like a 14-year-old kid, but he was dissing him for... He had been slow one time, but he was actually a pretty good player. But he'd been a little bit too slow on one thing because his computer lagged for just a second. And the guy was just jumping on him. And I'm like, you know what? Just log off and let those guys die.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm out of here.
If he wants to complain at you, just let him die. So in college, what else? Were you using your computer for actual college school, for like schoolwork related things very much?
Yes and no. I was on the cusp of, so I graduated high school in 92, and I was in college, you know, from 92 to 97. And so we were still on mainframe on campus. So we did have a MUD on our mainframe. We did have email, you know, and we programmed in Pascal.
Oh, I loved Pascal.
Yeah. At that point, we were really still, if I was going to do a report, you know, the internet was still really new and finding and sources and stuff. It wasn't until like my senior year that I could really use the internet for searching for information. So mm-hmm. I did some searching at that point, but mostly I was doing word processing on my computer at that point.
Did you have any computer classes or anything where you were supposed to log in and turn in your programs or your homework online, like to the school network or anything like that?
in school. No. The exception was I did take computer science, and you know, we had to turn in programming, but we were programming in the mainframe, so our assignments were done in there.
We're already there, yeah.
So slightly different, but none of my other classes. Now I was on geographic information systems, GIS. So I was at the cutting edge of that in the mid 90s. And so we were using computer systems for using, you know, geology. So we would be doing industrial problems. We're like, okay, we're finding high levels of mercury here. Why? And then we'd build out the map of the terrain and the watershed and how the rock strata, and then come up with a location of where the source of the problem was, you know. And they were using it for commercial uses as well, petroleum. If I wanted to get into, if I wanted to use GIS, I was going to have to go into oil or for the state for free. And that just didn't.
See, when you first said geological information, I thought maybe you, even before location sharing, you knew where Peter was at all times, for example. Or like you could solve the problem of, we don't understand why there's a beer shortage at this particular place in Puerto Rico. And you're like, that's because Peter Nicolaitis is there.
He's drinking all the high percent, high alcohol volume.
Yeah, all that 4.5 or 2 or whatever it is. It just cracks me up. It just cracks me up because every beer that he talked about from there, I don't think it was even in the mid fours at the highest. And it's like, what? Do they have a law? Is there a law? Or is it just that they drink so much throughout the day that they can't tolerate any higher?
Yeah, it's a constant thing. You know, they brush their teeth with it and everything.
I guess. Yeah. That sounds really bad, especially in the morning. Yeah. I don't think I'd want that.
Yeah. Mm. So GIS wasn't bad, but I did learn a lot of stuff about the computers that I was able to use higher powered computers than what I had as a PC at the university.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And then that got me into, when I graduated from college, I decided I was going to do civil engineering because I didn't want to do GIS. I did want to do GIS. I just couldn't make any money at it. So I was looking at civil engineering, of possibly getting my engineering degree. And I went to work for a civil engineering firm as a CAD draftsman since I was good with computers. And I found out I didn't like civil engineering because we were building subdivisions, which is really boring.
You don't even get to build an electric station or a dam or something like that.
No. And everything, you know, there's rules. You know, sewer goes downhill. Unless it's got to go uphill, you need a pump. And, you know, the water and the sewer have to be this far apart. The curb has to be this big, you know.
That is the best rule book. Sewer goes downhill unless it has to go uphill. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good. I think I could have written that rule book, Adam.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that as being pretty boring. Seems very cookie cutter.
And then I got, I was looking for a gig, and then I went to J.C. Bradford to be, by the way, when I went to be a civil engineering CAD draftsman, they asked me if I could be a CAD draftsman. And in my naivete, I said, it's on a computer, right? They said, yeah. I said, I can do anything on a computer.
That's hilarious. I was going to say, asking them if it's on a computer probably was an alarm bell, but not back then. It wouldn't have been an alarm bell at all.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot. I mean, this was the edge of phasing out the last artists who were draftsmen. And it was beautiful work that they did. Those drawings were works of art. So, like I said, I talked them into hiring me. I just pretty much said, yeah, I can do the job. It's on a computer. I can do anything on a computer. They're like, all right, well, start in 2 weeks. So I graduated from college on a Friday and started work with them the next Monday. Over the next 2 weeks, I bought an AutoCAD book. At the time, it was AutoCAD 13, and I bought an AutoCAD 11 book and learned that I didn't know anything about AutoCAD, but in 2 weeks, I knew how to do AutoCAD by reading the book. I didn't even have AutoCAD at home.
Yeah, well, I imagine it was probably pretty expensive.
Yeah, it was super expensive. Well, especially for me at that time. It's not all that, I mean, it's still expensive now, but I couldn't afforded that.
No way.
But I did that. But then I got tired of that. I was doing their IT in-house, and I really decided I wanted to do that full time. And so I got a firefighting job at J.C. Bradford. Once again, you know, they said, can you do this? And I was like, if it's on a computer, I can do it. It doesn't matter what it is. I'd never been on a domain. Like, the closest I'd been to a domain was NetWare at that point.
Right. Which is not same concept, not the same at all.
Not the same. They wanted me to manage, or they wanted me to work, not manage. They wanted me to be a firefighter within a 3,000 endpoint system with Windows networking, Windows, and it was NT 4.0 at that point. Yeah, and I was like, if it's on a computer, I can do it.
And that's when you found out how complicated the world of Windows networking can be.
Yes, I learned about COM ports, and I mean, one of my banes of existence, which I finally figured out how to do it, was essentially mapping printers. That was the worst thing we had to do back then. And fighting with the COM ports, making sure one was open and you gave it this. And we were still doing a lot of Linux stuff. There was still AS400s in our world, getting those things to communicate. So once I hit that, then it was wide open. I mean, I started there. They stayed with them until they got bought out. But I grabbed every piece of gear that was junk and made it into something. I had a server rack. I had a domain. I had workstations. Everybody's logging in. There's group policies.
Well, that's good. You get to practice in an environment where you're not worried about getting in trouble. And if you don't know what you're doing, and B, if something goes wrong.
Yeah. One time, of course, none of them are listening to this now, and it's irrelevant, you know, 25 years later.
I'm going to find them, Adam, and I'm going to send them this episode.
I was trying Loftcrack. You remember that?
Yes, 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 yes.
And there was a backup domain controller in my office. I got a domain admin password and ran Loftcrack and got every single password of everything that was in there. I was like, this is awesome. I'll be able to log in now wherever I need to.
You gotta think. Look, I know back then a lot of employers still do take a dim view of people trying to probe their network security, even if they've been hired to do so. But back then, they were less interested in the fact that they had problems and maybe other people who weren't so honest would exploit them than they were in just freaking out and getting mad at the person who was telling them about the problem.
Yeah. So like I learned lots of stuff there. And then, you know, I went to HCA, learned a lot of stuff there, which I got to be in a pretty cool network or group there. I was in an engineering group dealing with web servers. So we did all of the websites for all the HCA hospitals. And that was a big deal back then.
Yeah, sure.
And we kind of had this, it was kind of cutting edge. We were doing this template. So like we had like 15 or 20 templates and the hospitals could choose their template. And, you know, it dropped them in there and voila, a website spit out. And it was pretty cool.
What kind of web technology was this? Was this still Microsoft or was this something running on Linux and Apache or what was
it? It was actually all IIS.
Okay. I'm familiar with that. I used to do ASP and then ASP.NET and SQL Server stuff too. So, yeah. I haven't done any of it for a long, long time, but yeah, I used to.
And we were doing, so we had, I can't remember. It was web something. It was Google Analytics, but it was there was no Google Analytics back then. So we had this huge web something. It was a huge log analyzer, and we had, 8U servers with, you know, at the time, you know, maybe a terabyte of data, but that was a lot of data back then. And then, you know, we had hot swappable CPUs and hot swappable RAM banks and, you know, because it ran constantly just to be able to tell people how many visitors came to the website. You know, now we get it for free from Google. So that was where I got the, I mean, really to the point where it wasn't just that I was saying, if it's on a computer, I can do it. It was that at that point, I kind of had the chops to do it.
But you probably weren't walking around telling everybody that anymore either, though.
No.
Right. That's how you know that you actually can, is you've learned stuff, but you're not going around telling everybody if it's on a computer, you can do it.
Yeah. But, you know, that I wish my teams, you know, my employees had a hunger to learn IT like I did, you know, and that's why it's like, well, you didn't, you know, they're like, well, I don't have time to study at home to, you know, I've got kids and family. I'm like, well, I had kids and family too. I was just very, very interested in learning.
Yeah. The difficulty is some people are faster than others. And I don't mean that in a denigrating way, because I'm one of the people that I don't consider to be fast at learning new stuff. Or like in the group that I work at, I consider myself to be the dumbest guy for sure. Not even close. Like the people I work with are so smart. And my boss is so fast. He absorbs information so quick and he remembers it all. So he has an overall picture of how the entire system works software-wise. You know, and then I work with another guy. Man, he has just in a few short years from running the equipment to becoming an engineer and now being in charge of all the computers that are in the equipment, that guy has learned so much. When he's just amazing. He just soaks it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I also remember him back when he was a shift worker. I also remember him, you know, he was working on nights and I'd see him still at noon hanging around, you know, on his computer, just solving one last thing or just doing one last thing. He's just that kind of guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That reminded me. So I worked at Train in college building air conditioners, and I worked a power brake operator. So I ran a great big machine that had dies in it, went up and down and bent a piece of metal to an angle. You had a piece of blueprint. You had to turn the metal into the blueprint. So that was my job. But there was a computer there for looking up parts and very specific things. And I figured out if I took the vent cover off of it, I could reach inside of it and put a floppy into the computer and run my games, because that computer was way better than my own personal computer. So I could play games on the factory computer. But, you know, it's funny, as I've evolved, you know, I really don't do much in the way of gaming anymore. I spend all of my time in business development now. I don't spend it in IT learning new technologies, although I end up learning new technologies because it's just kind of necessary for the business, for, you know, it's like, well, somebody needs to know how to do this. Guess it's me.
That is the thing, is if you're in this career and you either want to keep yourself current or you have no choice but to keep yourself current, there's never an end to learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I had a guy that worked with me. He's like, there's no more room for anything new in my head. I just don't really want to learn anything new. Like, bro, you're in the wrong career.
Now, I will say, I understand the feeling of not having room for more. But what I will say is, you always do learn more. But some of the stuff that I worked on for years, it's kind of gone now. Like, it's like, I don't remember any of that stuff, because all the stuff I've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years has come in and shoved it out. If I had to, I could probably dig some of that up. But that's the thing, is like, you have to keep learning. And if you start forgetting some of the old stuff, well, too bad. If you ever need it again, maybe you can pick it up again. But you definitely have to keep learning the new stuff. You can't just say, I'm done. There's no stopping point with computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fooling around with a new firewall right now. It's object based, you know, and I used Sonic Walls in the past. I mean, that's kind of where I got my real firewall experience. I mean, Cisco and Sonic Wall, and object based is kind of how Sonic Wall operates. So, but I'm programming now the firewall by building a square and a site and dragging connectors and all this stuff. You know, I drag a connector and now I've got an L2TP VPN tunnel that's now running, and I didn't do any of it.
Interesting.
So now I'm thinking about how, okay, well, what's the logic of, I've got to get users into that network. I create a firewall rule. No. You got to build out connectors and you got to build out these objects.
So you can't do it both ways. Like, there's got to be some underlying code behind that thing that you would
think. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it happens, but you don't do it. It's more like Star Trek now. I'm overriding the power coupling here.
I think about some of the weird stuff we do with our networks at work, and I'm not even sure how that would function.
Yeah. Huh.
So you did a lot with working with other people and learning with other people, but how did you get to the point where you said, you know what, I'm going to do this for myself? And then how do you make that transition? That has to be pretty scary, because like, was that pre-family or was that post-family or what? How did that look?
So I tried to run my own IT company back in 2001 or mm-hmm. 2000. So J.C. Bradford got bought out, and I got, at the time, it wasn't much money, but it was a lot of money to me then.
Little severance package, yeah.
Yeah, a little severance package. I want to say it was like $10,000. You know, which was a ton of money.
It is, but it doesn't last very long when you need to make a living.
No, it doesn't last very long. So I tried to run my own company, and I was billing at $25 an hour in 2000.
Oh, my God.
And I had no clue. You know, I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't know how to bill. I didn't know how to invoice. I was the only employee. You know, I was doing all these things wrong. And then my wife got pregnant and we're like, we've got a baby coming. So that's when I bailed on that and went back went to work at HCA.
Yeah.
So I stayed with them a while, but it bothered me. I mean, I really wanted to run my own company. But then the guys from J.C. Bradford, where I got bought out, which was a great company to work with, those guys got together and said, hey, we want to start a new company. I'm like, I'm in. You know, I mean, we all liked working together. I'm in. So we started an investment banking firm, institutional sales, trading, you know, and they needed IT. I was IT. And so I went with them. They told me I was going to be a partner, but it was really semantics. I was a shareholder, not a partner.
Oh, yeah. That's a big semantic.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have opinions, you know, and, you know, want to have direction. But it really, my opinion didn't matter. And my shareholder points didn't matter because they weren't, I mean, I was nowhere near a majority holder.
Sure.
So I had no influence. Okay. Had no influence. And then it's like, okay, well, I still like working here, even though this isn't what I thought it was. I like the people here. I'm going to stay here. They were giving me a lot of freedom to take time off because I go on short-term mission trips. I like to travel. But, you know, when I go on that short-term mission, it's typically 12 days I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that more or less eats my entire vacation if I've only got 2 weeks. So they pretty much said, you know, there's three of you in the IT department. As long as we have coverage, y'all work that out. They said, don't drop the ball. And so who dropped the ball? My boss. He started taking too much time off. He got a side job working at like concerts for fun and things like that. And so they came down on him, which came down on me. And he's like, oh, you get 2 weeks vacation. And you've already taken your 2 weeks, so you don't get any more vacation. And I was like, all right, let's dust off the business plan because I want more flexibility in my life. I want to be able to do these mission trips. I do want to be able to do family vacation. I wasn't really ambitious as far as like, I want to make more money. At the time, I just wanted to make a living wage and be able to take time off. So that was 2008. So, 2007 is kind of when all that's hit the fan. And I spent a year preparing for going out on my own. And in 2008, I'd gathered everything I thought I needed to know and went out on my own. Mm-hmm. It was a rough time to go out on your own in 2008.
Something about the economy and
mortgage rates and everything went down. So I went out on my own then, and I roped in my mother to be my operations manager, and so she helped me out. And then I got a part-time employee. And then from there, it was just trudging forward one step after another, building the company. You know, now it's 2023, 13 or 15 years. How many years is that? Yeah, 15 years we're going on this year. We're doing well, 10 employees, and got offsite service desk of another 8 employees. And so it's grown quite a bit. And, you know, I'm able to take time off. I still wear a lot of hats. Every year I take off one or two more hats. But, you know, it's an overnight success story 15 years later.
Oh, yeah. As they all are. Now, how does your business withstand the effects of Peter trying to take up all your spare time? How does that work?
Well, see, Peter has a lifestyle business.
And he has a lifestyle business. That is correct.
And I have a business.
Right. I know. When he was trying to sell me on, who's that guy who wrote the 4-hour work week?
Oh, yeah. The 4-hour work week.
I was like, there is not one person in the world who's not independently wealthy that works 4 hours a week, Peter. The reason why that guy is working 4 hours a week is because people are eagerly buying his book to find out how they can work 4 hours a week.
I can do this. I can do this too. Yeah. No, somebody's got to do the hard work. And, you know, I forget. Oh, so Mike Michalowicz, I don't know if you know him as an author. He wrote, you know, I don't know, called The Pumpkin Plan and Profit First are really kind of what he's known for. And then he's got the toothpaste or toilet paper entrepreneur, and, you know, but he's got a book out, Clockwork, Getting Your Company to Work Like Clockwork. And it's kind of a next step as far as the E-Myth and then traction and scaling up. It's kind of the step in between. And he said his job is not to do the work, but to make jobs for other people as a CEO. That's his job,
right?
Is to employ other people. If he's doing the work, he's taking away from somebody's job.
Yeah, which in your position is both good and bad, because if you're properly building the company, you have people that you either know that you can rely on and you've correctly selected the right people, or you've helped develop people to the point where they can do that stuff and you can trust your team. And it's a skill and an accomplishment to build a good working team, but it also means that the stuff that you used to do, presuming you liked it, you don't really get to do that stuff anymore. And like you said, if you are in there doing it, you've got a problem because you're focusing on the wrong things at that point.
Well, just to be completely transparent, if I wanted to do things that I enjoyed doing, I would be a system engineer. That's what I most enjoy doing. That if money weren't, you know, if I didn't need money and I could just do a gig, I would be a system engineer, a system architect. I would be building, not running a business, doing HR, doing client meetings, all the headache. Yeah. But life has evolved and it's like, well, I no longer get to do that. But I have kind of sequestered all of Sublime's IT. I do our IT. So it kind of allows me to hit that a little bit.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And I will say, look, to be able to say that you went from not knowing how to run a business and having to go back to working for other people to now being able to run your own business for as long as you have and develop a team, that's got to be pretty satisfying, because that takes skill. That is not something that anybody can just do. There, you know, a lot of people fail at that kind of thing. So that's good. That's got to be rewarding.
Yeah, yeah. You know, do you ever listen to Dave Ramsey?
Uh-uh. I know who he is.
But yeah. So I used to listen to a lot of Dave Ramsey. And one of the things he talks about in his entrepreneurial thing is he said, you'll create 10 businesses before you'll have a successful one. And my wife and I were like, oh, no, he's crazy. And he said, well, every business that you ever thought of an idea you started on, it was a flop and whatever. You said that was a start of a business. Like, and we were counting them up like, oh. Sublime was my 10th company I've tried to do.
See, I guess that's one way to look at it, but I for sure would think of it more along the lines of, what have I put money into? You don't want to have 10 failures that you've put money into, because most people can't withstand that. Like, most people can't make it past that hurdle. Most people would be lucky to make it past the first failed business financially, let alone a second one, let alone a third one. You know what I mean? Like, financially, if you're putting money into something and you think this is going to be how I support my family,
mm-hmm.
that's how I look as starting a business.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a big leap of faith. And then, you know, there are days when I'm so sick of it that I'm like, oh, I'll sell it for a dollar just to make the headache go away. You know, and then there's days I'm like, no, it's, you know, there's an old song, you know, an old hymn, you know, is kind of a children's song, the Count Your Blessings, you know. And if I start counting the reasons why Sublime is a, you know, working at Sublime, running Sublime, and my life is good, you know, if I start counting those things, I'm like, yeah, this is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you, I'm sure there are tons of downsides to working for yourself and being responsible for other people's livelihoods and the time that that must involve and the fact that you don't always get to work on what you want to. But as somebody who works for a big corporation, I will say there's tons of downsides too, because you're subject to the whims of people who change their minds all the time. You're subject to the whims of the stock market. So you may find yourself doing, you know, people may find themselves doing the jobs of four people, you know, that were doing it previously and now they're not, and they're responsible. And by the way, they're not getting any raises, that kind of stuff. So there's definite downsides to other people's opinions being your law, you know?
Yeah, that is nice. I do like being the final say, you know, I take advice. I mean, it's not a democracy, but I'm definitely going to take input and come to an informed decision. But at the end of the day, it is my decision. It's nice. Yeah.
It has to be. Yeah. And that's good.
So,
okay. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
What is this one about bioluminescent bay? What is that?
Viaquez. So if Peter were going to be on today, I was going to ask him if he visited Viaquez.
Oh, that's why there's question marks.
Yeah. So, so there's a little offshoot of Puerto Rico Island, and within it, there's a bay, and it meets all of the, you know, environment variables to make a beautiful bioluminescent bay. So the bioluminescent bugs, you know, creatures got stuck in there and they've just kept blooming. And so they have a night, you can go out there and kayak and glass bottom kayaks. I mean, and it's like Tron. I mean, it's amazing. You get out there with these and like you see every place you put your oar, it glows. Yeah. And if you pick it up, it glows down your hand and you'll see fish swimming in the water and they'll just, whoo, and it's just a light stream falling. So it's a really cool thing.
Oh, that is cool.
Yeah, we went there, I guess it was, I don't remember what year, 2016. It was right before they had the big hurricane there that they lost so much infrastructure. But I was also going to ask him, it was the most, at that time, was the most expensive vacation we'd ever taken. Just everything cost more there.
Oh, interesting. I wonder about that. Because when the way he described his previous trip to me was a lot of the stuff that he did was, it seemed relatively inexpensive.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it was. I mean, you know, Peter is kind of cheap. I mean...
Well, I don't know. He's got his entire condo outfitted with Sonos gear. He can't be too cheap.
Yeah. Well, he's cheap in other ways. You know?
Yeah. It's good to pick and choose. It's good to know what you're willing to spend money on and then not to also spend money on everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. I won't fault him too much for that. I'm still a little bitter about the lifestyle work thing, but... I don't have a lifestyle career. When they talk about work-life balance with me, it means you better balance your life around work.
Yeah, that means when you took your vacation, did you consider the project list?
That's right. Oh, that's actually true because I've been negotiating. I talked to my... Now, the guy that I work for right now, he is super good about believing that. Like, he's like, look, if your family wants you to be able to take your time at this time, I really want you to be able to do it. But we still have to look at the things I'm responsible for and see if it works out. But he's really good about wanting to make it work. So I honestly don't have any complaints in that department. But you're right. In technically speaking, yeah, it's absolutely, well, if you're responsible for this and this thing is happening at this time, you know, most bosses there would probably say, no, I'm sorry, it's not happening.
Yeah, you know, and I, like I said, there's pros and cons to big company, small company. And one of the small company problems is if you and another person are critical to part of the business and that other person has already requested vacation off and you've requested it, I have to say, well no, Scott, you can't. I mean, can you reschedule? Right. I don't just say no. I'm like, well, what could we do? You know, we really can't make this work with both of you being off at that time. Where my wife, she spent time working at big companies and she's like, I don't care. I've got vacation days. I'm going to take it off. I'm like, well, I mean, if you're working with big corporate, you kind of expect that. But if you're working a small business, if you're going to take the benefits of being a small business, you got to take the bad things that come with small business.
You can't just have 2 weeks where nobody's doing this particular job usually for the most part. So
yeah,
for sure. I've worked with a lot of people who are kind of like that. They're good at working for a company. They do a great job, but they never could or would even dare to try to do something for themselves that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. It's totally different.
Yeah, it is a mindset. I had to adjust the way I thought because, like I said, when I was, you know, when I was trying to do it at $25 an hour completely, I was thinking like an engineer. I was thinking, well, it's only worth this much money. Not thinking like an entrepreneur of, okay, I've got a back end, all these other costs. I've got, you know, there's just a lot more to it. And, you know, I can't bill less. I mean, even when I went back, I wasn't billing anything less than $100 an hour, you know, 7 years later, which was less, you know, of course we bill a lot more now, you know, it's like $100 an hour. I felt like, that's what's needed to get everything done. And, but, you know, there's just a lot of education that I didn't have. And then I started thinking of everything in those terms. What's it going to cost to do the work? I've got to cover it and I've got to double that.
Yeah. And also you have to look at what other people are doing, not because you want to do the exact same things everybody else is doing, but you have to at least look like you know what you're doing and you're in the same ballpark, you're in the same space. So if you say, oh, $25 an hour, and they're like, everyone else wanted $150 an hour, what's wrong with this guy? That can be a problem too. Believe it or not, being too cheap can actually be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, oh, well, we can't be getting the same value for sure.
Yeah. This guy's working out of his garage, isn't he? His dad and mom are calling him into dinner.
Yeah. I'll be up in a minute, Ma.
All right, so what is Four Roses Bourbon today? What does that mean?
So it's just a little funny story. So I knew I wanted to get a beer for the podcast today.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to go at my local Pourvu. They're a local company or a local liquor store. I know the owner. And I went and picked my beer. But then I was like, well, when I'm here, I like to get a good bottle of bourbon. Mm-hmm. So I went to the bourbon section and I got there and there were these two older ladies and they were standing right in front of my bourbon. And I just said, you know, excuse me. And I grabbed the bottle that I wanted. And, you know, I wasn't rude. I was, you know,
Sure. Yeah.
And they said, well, what's the difference between, you know, cause I grabbed the bottles that they were looking at and the bottle of bourbon that I got was a $45 bottle of bourbon.
Uh-huh.
And they were comparing that to the $21 bottle of Four Roses bourbon.
Sure.
And they said, you know, what's the big difference here between these two?
Besides $20.
Besides $20. Yeah. So they took out the smart ass, you know, they were ready for that. They're like, aside from $20, what's the difference here? And I said, well, okay. So it's a single barrel malt. You know, I said, it's got a darker, smoky taste, a richer taste. I said, here's the real difference. Are you buying this for a bourbon connoisseur or for somebody you're wanting to buy some bourbon? I said, if you're buying for a bourbon connoisseur, get the $45 one. They will enjoy that. If they won't know the difference, get the $21.
Were they buying for themselves? Was it Grandma Liquor Night?
Yeah, they were buying a gift for somebody because they had told me, they said, we're buying a gift. We're buying this as a gift for somebody.
I see.
If it's a connoisseur, get the single barrel. Get what I got.
it wasn't just grandma's getting liquored up and talking about the old days.
Yeah. Like, you need to look on a lower shelf if you're just wanting to get drunk.
Yeah, we have solutions for you that don't cost anywhere near that much. Oh, that's awesome. That is cool. See, look, you're still helping people, Adam. You're helping people make the right decisions. That's the business you're in.
Do you ever watch Ted Lasso?
Yes, I watched the whole thing, yes. I'm trying to get Peter to resubscribe to watch it, because right now he doesn't have Apple TV Plus.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, once again, it's another thing he's cheap on. I had a girlfriend that had Apple TV, and I was watching it, and I'd watched it for 2 years, and then she cut me off.
So now I can't watch it. Huh, if only there was a way to subscribe for yourself, Peter. If only there was a way.
He probably would get it free with something he would upgrade, you know, yeah, or something he's already got. So, but, you know, there's the part when Jamie gets his password compromised, and he says, I thought I did it right. I spelled password with two S's. But it made me think of that. So my daughter's car, I'm upside down in it. I spent $4,500 on the car when she was 16, and she's now 22. And I have since put $12,000 in the car repairing. It was in positions where she was going to school in Louisville. You know, the transmission goes out in Louisville. Well, my choice is to buy her a new car or spend $4,000 on getting the stupid transmission fixed so that, you know, I was just right. So I made some. Oh, if I'd taken my time, I should have just bought her another car rather than fixing the issue and moving on. But so I said, I had to spend $4,000 to get the stupid thing back up and running.
Yeah, I'm not getting rid of it now.
Yeah, I'm not getting rid of it now. I'm super upside down on this thing, $3,500. And so I started driving it in April. It was my in-town car. And yesterday, it stopped driving over 2000 RPM. I could drive whatever speed I could get as long as the engine was under 2000 RPM.
Oh my God, but how do you get high enough to shift gear? I mean, you're like lugging in whatever gear you shift into.
Yeah. So I'm calling Kids for Cars today, and they are coming to pick up that car, and it's being donated, and I'll just drive my truck all the time again. But I was laughing because I'm like, you're going to make a company for kids, a nonprofit company, but you spell it wrong, you know, and you're like, kids, you're trying to educate kids, but now you're spelling your name wrong. So it's Kids for Cars with a K. I'm like, oh, you know, we know we spelled it wrong. We know kids starts with a C, you know.
It bothers me for reasons that I can't explain, and they're probably stupid, like who cares in the long run. If it works for them and they succeed at business, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I see that, and I'm like, that's weird. However, the business itself looks like a really good business.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to come pick it up. I could drop it off, but I can't drive the car there. It's like 40 minutes away. So they're going to come bring a tow truck tomorrow and haul it off. I'm sign the title and give them the keys, and I get a tax deduction for whatever they sell it for.
Well, Adam, you've got a bourbon to celebrate once that car's gone.
Yep, it's going to be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. The minute that thing hits the end of the driveway, you're going to be chugging down the bourbon. That is awesome. That's kind of a milestone. You're getting rid of a car that got your kid through college, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of crazy. She's now headed to law school.
Wow. Tell her to get a move on. She can support you. You can retire. This is your retirement plan, Adam.
Yeah, I need a lawyer.
Oh, you need a lawyer. Oh, yeah.
I need a lawyer.
Why? Are there bodies buried on that lavender farm of yours that we don't know about?
There's certain spots that are really purple.
Everything grows there for some reason.
Yeah, I'll have to send you some pictures because next week we start harvest. Right now, the flowers are up. They're purple, but you know how like a flower, it's budded, you know, like a rose, mm-hmm. it's budded, but the flowers haven't come out. So the lavender's getting ready. It's probably bursting out this weekend, and we'll be cutting it and hanging it and drying it.
What do lavender seasons look like? I don't know anything about them.
Well, it really depends on the environment. So out closer to you, your season's a bit later. So you're in July, depending on the variety plan. It's not a hard, fast rule, but generally speaking in Washington, July, and for the whole month of July, the lavender is beautiful. It's time to go visit. Yeah. Here, it's a little bit earlier. So mid-June to early July, that's kind of our big burst of color. I mean, we've got to cut it before it changes color and dies. But we're doing some additional varieties this year we've put in the ground. And so we'll have some early spring blooms, and then we're looking for some later, bigger blooms too, to kind of spread it out with the plants.
Yeah. That way you don't have all the pressure on one particular point in time. And not only that, you can also hopefully sustain product that you can sell over a longer period. That's cool.
Yeah.
Successful business number two could be coming up here.
That's our business that we, you know, when we couldn't do anything with COVID, we started another business. We started a lavender farm. So.
See, you can go back to Dave Ramsey and say, ha ha, you're wrong. I only failed one time and then I've got two successful businesses. Yeah, send some pictures. I'd like to see those.
Yeah, cool. I don't know if you have a closing process.
I don't. We don't have a closing process. We just tell people that the website for Friends with Brews is at friendswithbrews.com. And then Peter laughs endlessly over my Mastodon name, which I'm not going to give here, because all you have to do is go to friendswithbrews.com and click on the friends link and it'll list that down at the bottom. If he was here, he would try it and then he would fail and he would laugh endlessly. And then that's about it. And then he says, time to hit the big red button. But I will let you say time to hit the big red button, because you guys are the big red button experts.
All right. Well, it has been a pleasure hanging out with you today, Scott. So yes, I'm going to hit the big red button.
Tell your friends.